Thus, a study area described as a Greek temple in this case is represented as a modern school building by another person. Other statements may seem more contradictory. For instance, many subjects mentally traveling from one location to another in the spirit world will tell me the space around them is like a sphere, as we saw in the last chapter, but then they will add that the spirit world is not enclosed because it is limitless. I think what we have to keep in mind is that people tend to structure their frame of reference during a trance state with what their conscious mind sees and has experienced on Earth. Quite a few people who come out of trance tell me there is so much about the spirit world they were unable to describe in earthly terms. Each person translates abstract spiritual conditions of their experience into symbols of interpretation which make sense to them. Sometimes a subject will even express disbelief of their own visions when I first take them into a spiritual place. This is because the critical area of their conscious mind has not stopped dropping message units. People in trance soon adapt to what their unconscious mind is recording. When I began to gather information about souls in groups, I based my assessments of where these souls belonged on the level of their knowledge. Using only this criterion of identification, it was difficult for me to swiftly place a client. Case 16 came to me early in my studies of life in the spirit world. It was a significant one, because during the session I was to learn about the recognition of souls by color. Before this case, I listened to my subjects describing the colors they were seeing in the spirit world without appreciating the importance of this information in relation to souls themselves. My clients reported about shades of soul energy mass, but I didn't piece these observations together. I was not asking the right questions. I was familiar with Kirlian photography and the studies in parapsychology at UCLA, where research has indicated each living person projects their own colored aura. In human form, apparently we have an ionized energy field flowing out and around our physical bodies connected by a network of vital power points called chakras. Since spiritual energy has been described to me as a moving, living force, the amount of electromagnetic energy required to hold us all on our physical plane could be another factor in producing different earthly colors. It has also been said that a human aura reflects thoughts and emotions combined with the physical health of an individual. I wondered if these personal meridians projected by humans had a direct connection to what I was being told about the light emitted by souls in the spirit world. With case 16, I realized that radiated soul light visualized by spirits is not all white. In the minds of my subjects, every soul generates a specific color aura. I credit this case with helping me decipher the meaning of these manifestations of energy. Dr. Newton, all right, let's float outside your temple of study. What do you see around you, or off in the distance? S. People, large gatherings of people. S. In the distance, I can't count, hundreds and hundreds, there are so many. Dr. Newton, how many would you say? Dr. Newton, and do you identify with all these souls, are you associated with them? S. Not really, I can't even see all of them, it's sort of fuzzy out there, but my gang is near me. Dr. Newton, if I could call your gang of about 20 souls your primary cluster group, are you associated with the larger secondary body of souls around you now? S. We are all associated, but not directly. I don't know those others, Dr. Newton. Do you see the physical features of all these other souls in the same way as you did your own group in the temple? S. No, that isn't necessary. It is more natural out here in the open. I see them all as spirits. Dr. Newton, look out in the distance from where you are now. How do you see all these spirits? What are they like? S. Different lights, buzzing around as fireflies. Dr. Newton, can you tell if the souls who work with each other, such as teachers and students, stick together all the time? S. People in my gang do, but the teachers kind of stick to themselves when they are not assisting in our lessons. Dr. Newton, do you see any teacher, guides from where we are now? S. Pause. Some, yes, there are much fewer of them than us, Of course. I can see Carla with two of her friends. Dr. Newton, and you know they are guides, even without seeing any physical features? You can look out there at all the bright white lights and just mentally tell they are guides. S, sure, we can do that. But they are not all white. S, that's partially true, the intensity aspect of our energy can make us less brilliant. Dr. Newton, so Carla and her two friends display different shades of white? S, no, they aren't white at all. Dr. Newton, I don't follow you. S, she and her two friends are teachers. Dr. Newton, you mean souls are not all absolutely white? Dr. Newton, what is the difference? Are you saying these guides radiate energy which is not white? S, that's right. Dr. Newton, well, what color are they? S, yellow, of course. Dr. Newton, oh, so all guides radiate yellow energy? S, no, they don't. S, Carla's teacher is Valerz. He is blue. We see him sometimes here. Nice guy. Very smart. Dr. Newton, blue. How did we get to blue? S, Valerz shows a light blue. Dr. Newton, what? Dr. Newton, I'm confused. You didn't say anything about another teacher called Valerz being part of your group. S, you didn't ask me. Anyway, he is not in my group. Neither is Carla. They have their own groups. Dr. Newton, and these guides have auras which are yellow and blue? S, yes. Dr. Newton, how many other energy colors do you see floating around here? S, none. Dr. Newton, why not red and green energy lights? S, some are reddish, but no green lights. Dr. Newton, why not? S, I don't know, but sometimes when I look around, this place is lit up like a Christmas tree. Dr. Newton, I'm curious about Valerz. Does every spiritual group have two teachers assigned to their cluster? S, it varies. Carla trains under Valerz, so we have two. We see little of him. He works with other groups besides us. Dr. Newton, so, Carla herself is student teaching is a less advanced guide? S, somewhat indignantly, she is advanced enough for me. Dr. Newton, okay, but will you help me straighten out these color schemes? Why is Carla's energy radiating yellow and Valerz blue? S, that's easy. Valerz precedes all of us in knowledge and he gives off a darker intensity of light. Dr. Newton, does the shade of blue, compared to yellow or plain white, make a difference between souls? S, I'm trying to tell you. Blue is deeper than yellow and yellow is more intense than white, depending on how far along you are. Dr. Newton, oh, then the luminosity of Valerz radiates less brightly than Carla and she is less brilliant than your energy because you are further down in development? S, laughs, much further down. They both have a heavier, more steady light than me. Dr. Newton, and how does Carla's yellow color vary from your whiteness in terms of where you are going with your own advancement? S, with pride, I'm turning into a reddish, white. Eventually, I'll have light gold. Recently I've noticed Carla turning a little darker yellow. I expected it. She is so knowledgeable and good. Dr. Newton, really? And then will she eventually take her energy level to dark blue in intensity? S, no, to a light blue at first. It's always gradual, as our energy becomes more dense. Dr. Newton, so, these three basic lights of white, yellow, and blue represent the development stages of souls and are visibly obvious to all spirits. S, that's right, and the changes are very slow. Dr. Newton, look around again. Do you see all the energy colors equally represented by souls in this area? S, oh no. Mostly white, some yellows, and few blues. Dr. Newton, thank you for clarifying this for me. I routinely question everyone about their color hues while they are in trance. Aside from the general whiteness of the spirit world itself, my subjects report seeing a majority of other souls displaying shades of white. Apparently, A neutral white or gray is the starting point of development. Spirit auras then mix the primary colors of red, yellow, and blue from a base of white. A few people see greenish hues mixed with yellow or blue. To equate what I have heard about soul energy with the physical laws which govern the color spectrum we see in the heavens is just supposition. However, I have found some similarities. The energy of radiated light from cooler stars in the sky is a red, orange, while the hotter stars increase from yellow to blue, white. Temperature acts on light waves that are also visible vibrations of the spectrum with different frequencies. The human eye registers these waves as a band of light to dark colors. The energy colors of souls probably have little to do with such elements as hydrogen and helium, but perhaps there is an association with the high energy field of electromagnetism. I suspect all soul light is influenced by vibrational motion in tune with the harmonious spiritual oneness of wisdom. Some aspects of quantum physics suggest the universe is made up of vibrational waves which influence masses of physical objects by an interaction of different frequencies. Light, motion, sound, and time are all interrelated in physical space. I was hearing these same relationships applied to spiritual matter from my cases. Eventually, I concluded both our spiritual and physical consciousness project and receive light energy. I believe individual vibrational wave patterns represent each soul's aura. As souls, the density, color, and form of light we radiate is proportional to the power of our knowledge and perception as represented by increasing concentrations of light matter as we develop. Individual patterns of energy not only display who we are, but indicate the degree of ability to heal others and regenerate ourselves. People in hypnosis speak of colors to describe how souls appear, especially from a distance, when they are shapeless. From my cases, I have learned the more advanced souls project masses of faster-moving energy particles which are reported to be blue in color, with the highest concentrations being purple. In the visible spectrum on Earth, blue, violet has the shortest wavelength, with energy peaking in the invisible ultraviolet. If color density is a reflection of wisdom, then the lower wavelengths of white through yellow emanating from souls must represent lower concentrations of vibrational energy. Figure 3, page 103, is a chart I have designed for the classification of souls by color coding, as reported by my subjects. The first column lists the soul's spiritual state, or grade, level of learning. The last column shows our guide status and denotes our ability and readiness to serve in that capacity for others, which will be explained further in the next chapter. Learning begins with our creation as a soul and then accelerates with the first physical life assignment. With each incarnation, we grow in understanding, although we may slip back in certain lives before regaining our footing and advancing again. Nevertheless, from what I can determine, once a spiritual level is attained by the soul, it stays there. In Figure 3, I show 6 levels of incarnating souls. Although I generally place my subjects into the broad categories of beginner, intermediate, and advanced souls, there are subtle differences in between, at levels 2 and 4. For example, to determine whether a soul is starting to move out of the beginner stage at level I into level 2, I must not only know how much white energy remains, but analyze the subject's responses to questions which demonstrate learning. A genealogy of past life successes, future expectations, group associations, and conversations between my subjects and their guides, all form a profile of growth. Some of my subjects object to my characterizing the spirit world as a place governed by societal structure and organizational management symbolized by Figure 3. On the other hand, I continually listen to these same subjects describe a planned and ordered process of self development influenced by peers and teachers. If the spirit world does resemble one great schoolhouse with a multitude of classrooms under the direction of teacher souls who monitor our progress, then it has structure. Figure 3 represents a basic working placement model for my own use. I know it as imperfections. I hope follow, Up research by regression therapists in future years may build upon my conceptualizations with their own replications to measure soul maturity. This chapter may give the reader the impression that souls are as segregated by light level in the spirit world as people are by class in communities on Earth. Societal conditions on Earth cannot be compared with the spirit world. The differences in light frequency measuring knowledge in souls all comes from the same energy source. Souls are fully integrated by thought. If all levels of performance in the spirit world were on one grade level, souls would have a poor system of training. The old one, room schoolhouse concept of education on Earth limited students of different ages. In spiritual peer groups, souls work at their own developmental level with others like them. Mature teacher, guides prepare succeeding generations of souls to take their places. And so there are practical reasons why conditions exist in the spirit world for a system designed to measure learning and development. The system fosters enlightenment and ultimately the perfection of souls. It is important to understand that while we may suffer the consequences of bad choices in our educational tasks, we are always protected, supported, and directed within the system by master souls. I see this as the spiritual management of souls. The whole idea of a hierarchy of souls has been part of both Eastern and Western cultures for many centuries. Plato spoke of the transformation of souls from childhood to adulthood passing through many stages of moral reason. The Greeks felt humankind moves from immoral, immature, and violent beings over many lives to people who are finally socialized with pity, patience, forgiveness, honesty, and love. In the 2nd century AD, the new Christian theology was greatly influenced by Plotinus, whose Neoplatonist cosmology involved souls having a hierarchy of degrees of being. The highest being was a transcendent one, or God, creator, out of which the soul, self was born which would occupy humans. Eventually, these lower souls would return to complete reunion with the universal over soul. My classification of soul development is intended to be neither socially nor intellectually elitist. Souls in a high state of advancement are often found in humble circumstances on Earth. By the same token, people in the strata of influence in human society are by no means in a blissful state of soul maturity. Often, just the reverse is true. In terms of placement by soul development, I cannot overemphasize the importance of our spiritual groups. Chapter 9, on beginner souls, levels I and 2, will more closely examine how a soul group functions. Before going further, however, I want to summarize what I have learned about the principles of soul group assignments. Regardless of the relative time of creation after their novice status is completed, all beginner souls are assigned to a new group of souls at their level of understanding. Once a new soul support group is formed, no new members are added in the future. There appears to be a systematic selection procedure for homogeneous groupings of souls. Similarities of ego, cognitive awareness, expression, and desire are all considerations. Irrespective of size, cluster groups do not directly intermix with each other's energy, but souls can communicate with one another across primary and secondary group boundaries. Primary clusters in levels I and II may split into smaller subgroups for study, but are not separated from the integrated whole. Rates of learning vary among peer group members. Certain souls will advance faster than others in a cluster group, although these students may not be equally competent and effective in all areas of their curricula. Around the intermediate level of learning, souls demonstrating special talents, healing, teaching, creating, etc., are permitted to participate in specialty groups for more advanced work while still remaining with their cluster group. At the point where a soul's needs, motives and performance abilities are judged to be fully at level 3 in all areas of self-development, they are then loosely formed into an independent studies work group. Usually, their old guides continue to monitor them through one master teacher. Thus, a new pod of entities graduating into full level 3 could be brought together from many clusters within one or more secondary groups. When they approach level 4, souls are given more independence outside group activities. Although group size diminishes as souls advance, the intimate contact between original peer group members is never lost. Spirit guides have a wide variety of teaching methods and instructional personifications depending upon group composition. Within a single cluster of souls, 8R guides, I have never worked with a subject in trance who did not have a personal guide. Some guides are more in evidence than others during hypnosis sessions. It is my custom to ask subjects if they see, feel a discarnate presence in the room. If they do, this third party is usually a protective guide. Often, a client will sense the presence of a discarnate figure before visualizing a face or hearing a voice. People who meditate a great deal are naturally more familiar with these visions than someone who never called upon his or her guide. The recognition of these spiritual teachers brings people into the company of a warm, loving creative power. Through our guides, we become more acutely aware of the continuity of life and our identity as a soul. Guides are figures of grace in our existence because they are part of the fulfillment of our destiny. Guides are complex entities, especially when they are master guides. The awareness level of the soul determines to some extent the degree of advancement of the guide assigned to them. In fact, the maturity of a particular guide also has a bearing on whether these teachers have only one student or many under their direction. Guides at the senior level of ability and above usually work with an entire group of souls in the spirit world and on earth. These guides have other entities who assist them. From what I can see, every soul group usually has one or more other new teachers in training. As a result, some people may have more than one guide helping them. The personal names my clients attach to their guides range from ordinary, whimsical, or quaint, sounding words, to the bizarre. Frequently, these names can be traced back to a specific past life a teacher spent with a student. Some clients are unable to verbalize their guide's name because the sound cannot be duplicated, even when they see them clearly while under hypnosis. I tell these people it is much more important that they understand the purpose of why certain guides are assigned to them, rather than possessing their names. A subject may simply use a general designation for their guide, such as director, advisor, instructor, or just my friend. One has to be careful how the word friend is interpreted. Usually, when a person in trance talks about a spiritual friend, they are referring to a soul, mate or peer group associate rather than a guide. Entities who are our friends exist on levels not much higher or lower than ourselves. These friends are able to offer mental encouragement from the spirit world while we are on earth, and they can be with us as incarnated human companions while we walk the roads of life. One of the most important aspects of my therapeutic work with clients is assisting them, on a conscious level, with appreciating the role their guides play in life. These teacher entities edify all of us with their skillful instruction techniques. Ideas we claim as our own may be generated by a concerned guide. Guides also comfort us during the trying periods in our lives, especially when we are children in need of solace. I remember a charming remark made by a subject after I asked when she began seeing her guide in this life. "Oh, when I was daydreaming," she said. "I remember my guide was with me on my first day of school when I was really scared. She sat on top of my desk to keep me company and then showed me the way to the bathroom when I was too afraid to ask the teacher." The concept of personalized spiritual beings goes far back in antiquity to our earliest origins as thinking human beings. Anthropological studies at the sites of prehistoric people suggest their totemic symbols evoked individual protection. Later, some 5,000 years ago, a city, states arose. Official deities became identified with state religions. These gods were more remote and even generated fear. Thus, personal and family deities assumed great importance in the day-to-day life of people for protection. A personal soul deity served as a guardian angel to each person or family, and could be called upon for divine help during a crisis. This tradition has been carried down into our cultures of today. We have two examples at opposite ends of the United States. Omaku is a personal god to Hawaiians. The Polynesians believe one's ancestors can assume a personal god relationship, as humans, animals, or fish, to living family members. In visions and dreams, Omaku can either assist or reprimand an individual. In Northeastern America, the Iroquois believe a human's own inner spiritual power is called Ender, which is connected to a higher personal Ender spirit. This guardian is able to resist the powers of harm and evil directed at an individual. The concept of soul watchers who function as guides is part of the belief system of many Native American cultures. The Zuni tribes of the Southwest have oral traditions in their mythology of God, like beings with personal existences. They are called the makers and holders of life paths and are considered the caretakers of souls. There are other cultures around the world which also believe someone other than God is watching over them to personally intercede on their behalf. I think human beings have always needed anthropomorphic figures below a supreme God to portray the spiritual forces around them. When people pray or meditate, they want to reach out to an entity with whom they are acquainted for inspiration. It is easy to ask for aid from a figure which can be clearly identified in the human mind. There is a lack of imagery with a supreme God which hinders a direct connection for many people. Regardless of our diverse religious preferences and degrees of faith, people also feel if there is a supreme God, this divinity is too busy to bother about their individual problems. People often express an unworthiness for a direct association with God. As a result, the world's major religions have used prophets who once lived on earth to serve as our intermediaries with God. Possibly because some of these prophets have been elevated to divine status themselves, they are not personal enough anymore. I say this without diminishing the vital spiritual influence all the great prophets have had on their followers. Millions of people derive benefit from the teachings of these powerful souls who incarnated on earth as prophets in our historical past. And yet, people know in their hearts, as they have always known, that someone, some personal entity individual to them, is there, waiting to be reached. I have the theory that guides appear to people who are very religious as figures of their faith. There was a case on a national television show where the child of a devout Christian family suffered a near-death experience and said she saw Jesus. When asked to draw with crayons what she saw, the little girl drew a featureless blue man standing within a halo of light. My subjects have shown me how much they depend upon and make use of their spiritual guides during life. I have come to believe we are their direct responsibility, not God's. These learned teachers remain with us over thousands of earth years to assist in our trials before, during, and after countless lives. I notice that, unlike people walking around in a conscious state, subjects in trance do not blame God for their misfortunes in life. More often than not, when we are in the soul state, it is our personal guide who takes the brunt of any dissatisfaction. I am often asked if teacher, guides are matched to us or just picked at random. This is a difficult question to answer. Guides do appear to be assigned to us in the spirit world in an orderly fashion. I have come to believe their individual teaching styles and management techniques support and beautifully integrate with our permanent soul identity. For instance, I have heard about younger guides, whose past lives included overcoming particularly difficult negative traits, being assigned to souls with the same behavior patterns. It seems these empathetic guides are graded on how well they do in their assignments to effect positive change. All guides have compassion for their students, but teaching approaches vary. I find some guides constantly helping their students on Earth, while others demand their charges work out lessons with little overt encouragement. The maturity of the soul is, of course, a factor. Certainly graduate students get less help than freshmen. Aside from the developmental level, I look at the intensity of individual desire as another consideration in the frequency of appearance and form of assistance one receives from his or her guide during a life. As to gender assignments, I find no consistent correlation of male and female subjects to masculine or feminine appearing guides. On the whole, people accept the gender portrayed by their guide as quite natural. It could